on our agenda this meeting. We're going to be taking up item M. So this is item M. We're back in session on our business meeting. This is the Judicial Branch Administration report from the Judicial Council's Advisory Committee on Financial Accountability and Efficiency for the Judicial Branch. This is A&E. This is not an action item. And we welcome back Justice Huffman and also Justice O'Leary, as well as Judge Nadler and Judge Buckley, as well as Althea.
Thank you, Chief Justice. We're here to make a presentation at the direction of the Executive and Planning Committee, and I'm joined, as you've pointed out, by Judges Nadler, Buckley, and Justice O'Leary when her scooter gets here. I would also point out that we, in order to accomplish the work of the committee, we break it down in our various assignments into working groups. And in addition to the presenters here, we've had the help of Judge Robert Oliver from Fresno and Judge Lorna Offsney from San Diego and Mike Planet from Ventura, who've helped us work through this presentation. The charge that was given to the committee, the Judicial Council requested a structural and fiscal review of AOC divisions, including core functions, funding levels and sources, staffing levels, collaboration among divisions. If you have nothing to do this evening, we should be able to get through this certainly by tomorrow. The A&E committee itself wants to make it clear to the council that we're presenting the information gathered as best we can in a neutral fashion. We are not making any recommendations, implied or otherwise. We don't perceive that as our role. It's information gathering. And although we have approval from the council to proceed with a division-by-division review of the AOC in a much more in-depth process, that will be for another day. We are going to, in the order of presentations, Judge Nadler will go first, and he has to leave at the end of his presentation for an important ceremony in Sonoma. He tells me that they declined to have the helicopter take him in light of the appearance that might give. Take your scooter?
Your scooter.
Yeah. Pump real fast, though. He will be followed by Justice O'Leary, myself, and then Judge Buckley. On the issue of questions, I would urge you, if you have questions for the presentation of Judge Nadler, you ask before he leaves, because each of us are working rather specifically on our divisions. There have been, in order to address some of the issues, there's been a number of questions in our discussions about temporary employees, or temps, as you will see them on the various items. We have distributed to you a sheet that talks entitled Types of Temporary Staff, and we'll be using that information in the presentation of the various divisions. There is one item up there, the IDIQ classification. I will leave that for discussion of the OCCM and perhaps the technical areas of the AOC. The term agency temp, as you see it in the material, are employees of an agency who are hired under a contract with that agency for specific purposes. There's a broad range of uses of those employees, ranging from clerical people to facilities managers, also at least in one instance an attorney. Those are people, again, hired under that process, and we will report them in the headcounts as we deal through that. You'll see also the term 909 temporary employees. This is a person hired classically for a specific purpose, for a limited period of time, not necessarily or not an authorized budgeted position, but a limited term position. Some of them, for example, are grant-funded positions, people who are hired for the period of a grant to work on that particular subject matter. Or another example, the Human Resources Division does labor negotiations for about half of the trial courts in California, but there remains a question as to whether that is a function the AOC wishes to continue or should continue. And as a consequence, the uncertainty, permanent staff have left, and in order to fulfill its function, they have hired people as 909 employees for the specific purpose of doing that. So as you see these numbers, the approval process for the temporary employees, for example, agency employees, require approval of the executive office. The 909 employees require first an application by the division director for an exemption from the FTE requirements. That goes to finance to check the issue of funding availability, and then on to the executive office. And since 2008, all of these employees require executive office approval. To give you a brief overview, we're going to be talking about all of the divisions, and we thought we'd start off giving you some just overview numbers that maybe will help you with the context of analyzing where the divisions are, so you don't have to have your calculator out to ultimately add up the total. We have also picked a five-year period in order to do this, to make it doable within our time and our resources. So we started with June 30 of 2006 through as late as we can in 2011. You'll note on the slide in front of you, just for example, in 2006, the AOC had 812 authorized positions, 667 total regular employees, meaning the people aboard. In order to, if you had 100 FTEs, you might have 105 people doing it because some are working part-time, but it accumulates to the same amount of person hours. And 33 909 employees for a total of 700 is your regular headcount, not including agency temps that I'll get to. You can see probably the high water mark for the AOC staffing authorized positions was 2009. As of December 2011, we have 788 regular employees, 31,909, for a total headcount of employees of 819. We then turn to the agency temps to add to that number. Now, an agency temp is hired under a master contract with the providing agency and are used for, again, this variety of purposes. So what I have, or what we have for you here, is June 30, 2007, 39 agency temps and a total expenditure. As of 2011, it was June 30th, it was 110. It's down to 92, and you see those numbers. There have been some also, part of our process here, incidentally, as we try to report this information to you, it's a moving target. The AOC is a living organization that is adjusting to the loss of resources and changes in perhaps assignments. And divisions have been removed and spread out to other places. So making a linear tracking is not the easiest of all assignments. Also, there have been recent reductions in the authorized. These are authorized staffing levels. AOC has reported to the controller. They have removed 83, as I recall, positions that were authorized but not filled positions, and which reduces your authorized number. They've also reduced then permanently, under the voluntary separation incentive plan, 29 positions have been vacated, and those positions cannot be filled for a two-year period. If we then look at the expenditures just very briefly, again, this is only an overview, and we're not going to go through all the numbers, but if you take the period of 2006-07, and I have two slides, one including OCCM and one excluding it, and we do that simply to assist you in focusing on what is an apparent growth area, so that you're able to put these numbers in some context. You can see 2006-07, you had a $412 million budget for the or funding for the AOC. By 2010-11, it's $554.79 million. If you then exclude the OCCM, and we're doing that again only to give you numbers that you can make whatever comparisons you wish to make. 2006-07 would have been $375.8 million. 2011, $345.5 million, showing that the growth area is in, obviously, a substantial part in the OCCM, which makes sense if you're taking over responsibility for 500-plus buildings and running a large construction program. Now, before I finish my comments, just let me say this process has been a lot of work, and we have called upon the ALC staff, and we've had total cooperation. We've not been refused anything we've asked for, and we have imposed heavily on all of them to produce document after document and answer questions and produce materials. You have in your files, you have a substantial volume of material on each of the divisions, and we won't, of course, go over that. I want to specifically note that Althea Lowe Thomas and her staff have been exceptionally helpful working with us through all of these presentations. Putting up with us, I think, is the bigger part of it. So we are going to then, as we go through the divisions, what we're going to do in a fairly quick fashion is to review the staffing and the mission of those divisions from that period of roughly 2006, as well as their funding and their collaborative efforts. Regarding questions as to this, and it is a massive material, again, I suggest if you have questions about the divisions on which Judge Nadler reports, that you ask him before he leaves. With regard to other questions, our suggestion is you probably better serve to wait till the end of the presentation. On the other hand, this is your request, your program, and so I will leave it to counsel to determine when and how they want to ask questions. So, Judge Nadler, we'll go to you first.
Thank you, Chief Justice and members of this Judicial Council, for the opportunity to present an overview of certain divisions of the AOC. As a result of our division of responsibility, I will be presenting an overview of the Office of Governmental Affairs, the Office of the General Counsel, and the Education Division. Starting with the Office of Governmental Affairs, the division director is Kurt Child. The general purpose of OGA is to promote and maintain positive relations with the legislative and executive branches and to advocate for the Judicial Council on legislative, budget, and policy matters that impact the courts and the administration of justice in California. OGA assists the Policy Coordination and Liaison Committee and various judicial branch committees to analyze bills of interest to the judicial branch. And this includes gathering information from appropriate committees and reporting based on that information. The OGA tracks approximately 1,000 court-related bills each year, which is roughly one-third of all introduced bills. OGA also advocates on behalf of the council with regard to its legislative positions, including helping to develop the council, to develop council-sponsored legislation, working with legislators, legislative staff, and other stakeholders to advocate on behalf of the council. And in addition, OGA works extensively with the governor's office concerning various legislative issues. OGA spends considerable time on budget advocacy. It works collectively with the Chief Justice, the Administrative Director of the Courts, and the Deputy Director, the Finance Division, and it represents the branch on all budget matters. This includes budget strategy, coordination of legislative committee hearings and presentations, and negotiations with the legislative and executive branch. OGA works to maintain positive relationships with the legislative and executive branches, as well as with the State Bar and other justice system partners. Some examples include of these efforts include the Day on the Bench program, where the legislators spend a day in court with judges in their districts, orientations on the judicial branch for new legislators and their staff at the beginning of each new legislative session, the Benchmark Coalition, a statewide partnership with the State Bar of California that enhances interaction between the judiciary and state, local, minority, and specialty bars. And finally, OGA presents workshops to educate court staff on new laws relative to court administration issues and to help with the implementation of legislative mandates and education as to legislation. The total budget for OGA was $2,138,462, to be exact. Personal services accounted for roughly three-quarters of this budget, and operating expenses and equipment accounted for the remainder. Between fiscal year 06-07 and fiscal year 10-11, there has been a slight increase in the budget, about 4%, but the budget has been, for the most part, quite stable. OGA has 13 authorized full-time positions: director, assistant director, three attorneys, three governmental affairs analysts, one supervising administrative coordinator, and two administrative coordinators, and two secretarial positions. And of these 13 authorized full-time positions, 12 are currently filled. OGA is currently without a senior governmental affairs analyst and a portion of an attorney. We don't know which portion of the attorney that is. I didn't ask. Between fiscal year 06-07 and 08-09, between one and two agency temporary employees were used but have not been used since fiscal year 09-10, and no 909 employees were used except one during 07-08. The unique issues regarding the OGA, we have, of course, our budget crisis. The OGA has directed the majority of its efforts to defend the branch against budget cuts that threaten the integrity of the judicial system. With respect to the internal issues of the branch, the OGA is spending considerable effort trying to come up with a unified message to the legislature, which these days is particularly challenging and consumes additional resources of this division. And due to term limits, efforts to build long-lasting relationships with legislators who understand the workings of the judicial branch is challenging. Roughly one-third of each House's membership turns over every 2 years. And as a result, OGA spends considerable time and resources forming new relationships and educating new members about the branch and its needs. In addition to the overall functions of the division, OGA has served as the lead representative in implementation of the criminal justice realignment legislation, has worked with the governor's office and legislature on behalf of the council and branch, has worked with AOC divisions to implement the legislation. It's the point of contact for all court staff, judges, and justices regarding legislative issues on request, and provides up-to-date information on the status of legislation. And as noted previously, OGA works with lobbyists and legislative counsel, including the California Judges Association, to share information and concerns and to coordinate advocacy on issues of mutual interest to the judiciary. With respect to the Office of the General Counsel, Mary Roberts is the General Counsel. The purpose of the OJC is to provide legal advice and services to the Chief Justice, the Judicial Council, including its advisory committees and task forces, the appellate and trial courts, and the AOC. Some interesting statistics. Since this council established its litigation management program in January of 2000, all but three of the 58 trial courts had litigation managed by the OGC. The extent to which the various courts utilize OGC services varies according to the needs of each court. Some examples: LA is the largest consumer of litigation management services, with a total caseload representing about 25% of the statewide litigation management provided to trial courts. At the same time, LA has its own in-house legal staff, which provides that county with its own legal opinions, and has only requested such opinions 23 times in the last 5 years. Smaller courts have required a greater utilization of OGC services for legal opinions. For example, Ventura has access legal opinion services 82 times in the last 5 years. Tulare has accessed legal opinion services 94 times in the last 5 years. Only one trial court, Mariposa, has not accessed legal opinion services in the last 5 years. I've tried to exclude Sonoma from this calculation, but I can tell you that I'll probably be right up there with the request for assistance. Over the last 5 years, OGC has received approximately 1,500 requests for services involving legal opinions. The primary units of OGC are the Labor and Employment Unit, which provides advice to the courts, and the AOC, averaging 500 advice matter requests per year. The unit assists in drafting and review of personnel policies and procedures of the AOC, provides annual legal updates for courts and HR personnel, represents courts in the AOC in administrative proceedings, arbitrations, lawsuits, unemployment hearings, and PERP proceedings, and oversees and participates in internal investigations of claims of discrimination made against trial and appellate courts and the AOC. The legal opinion unit provides guidance to the trial and appellate courts, judicial counsel, chief justice, and the AOC on court and judicial administration issues. Litigation management is busy. Over 200 claims against the trial courts are resolved each year by this unit. Approximately 250 lawsuits against the trial courts are managed by OGC each year, including approximately 40 employment-related lawsuits. The unit also assists trial court employees and judicial officers in responding to an average of 140 subpoenas and 75 attempted disqualifications, 170.1s, each year. And finally, the unit manages between 10 and 15 lawsuits against the Supreme Court and Courts of Appeal, respectively, each year. Real estate unit is responsible for the transfer of 451 trial court facilities from 58 counties to state judicial branch responsibility. These transfers were largely completed at the end of 2009. However, the unit continues to provide legal advice and transactional oversight of both owned and leased court facilities and is involved with negotiation of and drafting of acquisition agreements, construction agreements, financing agreements, and related CEQA compliance issues. As for funding, the budget for fiscal year 2010-2011 by funding source is as follows. A total of $11.8 million, which is a decrease of 6.8% from the preceding year. The general fund, which is the trial court trust fund, involves a budget of $8.5 million. The motor vehicle account, $185,000, and this supports staff to the Council's Traffic Advisory Committee. The Trial Court Improvement Fund, $1.5 million, which supports staff in the Regional Office Assistance Group, which is 8 attorneys and 3 support staff positions. And the State Court Facilities Construction Fund of $1.5 million, which supports staff in the Real Estate Unit. Additional funding is about $5.1 million, which is shown in the financial data, which I believe was provided to you as local assistance. And these are the costs of various programs for the trial courts that are paid from the Trial Court Improvement Fund and the MOD Fund, formerly the Judicial Administration Efficiency and Modernization Fund. The budget sources for the local assistance includes the litigation management program, judicial performance defense insurance, which involves the CJP matters, subscription costs for the judicial conduct reporter, trial court transactional assistance program, and funds such as that. OGC currently has 75 authorized positions as of fiscal year 2010-2011. 64 positions are filled, and that includes one 909 employee. 8 are vacant at a 17.1% vacancy rate, and it uses 5 agency temporary employees. The data provided to the council shows 7 temporary agency workers, 3 attorneys, and 4 secretaries. Since that chart was completed, one of the 3 attorneys left, one of the 4 secretaries left. Thus, there are 5 agency temporary employees presently. With respect to the issue of the unique issues of this division, changes were made effective September of 2011. The OGC was tasked with providing support for the secretariat function and related judicial council support upon the elimination of the Executive Office Program Division. The 2011 Criminal Justice Realignment Act has resulted in a substantially increased workload for this division. In addition, there have been numerous public requests for administrative court records as a result of the application of Rule 10.500. And OGC, working with other divisions, is responsible for creating and maintaining judicial counsel forms. There's much collaboration with other agencies and divisions. Examples include collaboration with the Center for Children, Families, and the Courts, working for groups such as the Consumer Attorneys of California, California Defense Council, Chamber of Commerce, on such projects such as the Electronic Discovery Act of 2009, expedited jury trial legislation, and rules for management of collection cases. Going to the Education Division, this is headed by Dr. Diane Cowdery. The strategic plan goal for the Education Division is to provide high-quality education and professional development in order to enhance the ability of all individuals serving in the judicial branch to achieve high standards of professionalism, ethics, and performance. To achieve these stated goals, the Education Division provides broad access to all judicial branch personnel, to resources and training in many forms. And overall, the education and training increases the ability of those in our branch to provide the best possible service to the public, leading to enhanced trust and confidence in the courts. The division has more than 300 concurrent education projects, including continuing educational programs, research, and guide materials. Some examples: 100 live programs, ranging from a single ethics course to multi-week course events, 75 online videos recorded as lectures in the studio or at live events, 60 broadcasts, complex and simple, many of which are later available as online video, 25 video conference programs, 7 webinars, 14 new complex online courses, 10 new bench tools such as short job aids, 2 new bench guides and updates for 30 online courses, 40 bench guides, 7 bench books, and 6 bench handbooks. This is a lot of publication and takes a lot of work. The general or most important units of the Education Division include the Curriculum and Course Development Unit, the Production Delivery and Education Technology Unit, which works with the Curriculum and Course Unit to develop the means of delivering the educational content. The Curriculum and Course Unit works with various committees to determine what that content is. The Publication and Resources Unit creates and updates publications for judicial officers, including bench guides. The Design and Consulting Unit provides input as to the most effective way to deliver the course content, and the Administrative Services Unit is responsible for providing infrastructure necessary to provide the education, including conference rooms, handling registration for programs, off-site facility, contracting and negotiation, copy service, etc. I really appreciate going first. I can see for 3 hours this is going to be a scintillating discussion for you. Sorry, I have to leave at the end of this. We'll go to the funding issues. The general fund budget is a total budget of $14.4 million. The largest general fund cost areas include the printing of participant materials, temporary AV technical support staff, which supports the live events and the distance education programs, equipment purchases, maintenance and repair of equipment, program and office supplies, communications, which include phone lines for technical support staff, fiber lines for satellite broadcasts, etc., and the contract program faculty and publication writers, in-state travel for events. The special funds, the local assistance funds, as you see it on the budget item, amounted to $1.8 million approximately, and this consists of the Modernization Fund and Trial Court Trust Fund. And with respect to this division, this special funds pay primarily for lodging and meals, for program participants, faculty costs, satellite network costs, et cetera. And this is for trial courts only. This funding is for the use of trial courts. Regard to personnel, the faculty for education are primarily judicial officers who help design, develop, and deliver the education. And as of November 15th of this year, the division had 92.5 authorized position, 94 regular and 909 temporary employees, and 4 agency temporary employees. Now, the types of personnel can be broadly divided into 4 categories: committee support, education and needs analysis and curriculum and course development, education design and consulting, division operations, project management, faculty support, and course delivery logistics, and AOC-wide administrative services. To understand the number of employees is sometimes a moving target and difficult. But if I could use the education division as an example, there are 11 909 employees as of November 15th, 2011, that I included in the description of regular positions. But of the 909 employees, they're not full-time employees, and they're used by the division on a sporadic or intermittent basis. And the reasoning was that if those employees were used as needed, there would be considerable savings overall without having to have regular employees do those same tasks. So it's a little bit misleading to talk about the 94 regular and 909 employees, because of that number, 11 are intermittent and are only used when needed. And finally, some unique issues with respect to this division. The education division works closely with larger courts, and they support the larger courts' own internal education. And with regard to smaller courts that cannot support their own education, they provide education directly to those courts. It also developed an online resource for training coordinators so they can share their courts' training materials and classes with one another. And, of course, the division provides the required education, new judge education, including new judge orientation, and the Witkin Judicial College, and continuing education for judicial officers, court personnel, and court administrators. The division has worked collaboratively with various agencies, and I won't go through those in any detail, but a lot of the collaboration had to do with working with local colleges and universities to help to develop courses to train court administrators and the like through their programs so that they can come out and provide services to the judiciary. It also works with agencies such as the National Judicial College, or collaboratively with that institution to provide courses, and at times served as a co-sponsor of programs in California with the NJC. So, that being said, if there are any questions, now would be the chance.
Any questions for Judge Nadler, who won't be staying for the remainder of the
day? With a broken heart. Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you. Thank you for your hard effort.
You know, Chief Justice, remember, if it gets tedious at some point in time, talk to Justice Miller. He's the one that asked for it.
And I was so nice to you earlier.
Don't get used to it.
Let me start with my name.
Yeah. Well, I have one leg to stand on, though. Did the sympathy work? I mean, cost me a lot of money to... Okay, cost me a lot of money to rent this scooter. I'm reporting on HR, finance, and OCCM. And I'll start with HR. HR provides traditional HR services to the Supreme Court, the Courts of Appeal, the AOC, and the Habeas Corpus Resource Center. It also provides to the trial courts, if it's so requested, workman's compensation. 56 of the 58 counties, county court systems, do use the workman's comp insurance through the HR at the AOC. Payroll services are also available for trial courts if they choose to avail themselves of that. 27 of our courts do use the AOC's HR division. And labor negotiations are available for the trial courts if they choose to use them through the AOC, and 31 of the trial courts use the AOC's HR labor negotiators. In terms of funding, HR receives is primarily funded by the general fund. In 06-07, their total funding was about $10.5 million. $9.5 million of that came from the general fund. Today, their total funding is $10.8 million. It's about a 2.7% increase in the last 5 years. Personnel in the employees and temporary employees in the HR divisions has been declining, but I think has leveled out. We started in the fiscal year ending June 30th, 06, where there were 67 authorized positions and 52 filled positions. As of today, there are 51 authorized positions and 38 positions filled. They have one temp employee now. Temps are not traditionally used in HR. They, given authorized positions, they have about a 25% vacancy rate at the current time. Unique issues for HR is that HR is the professionals are well-trained in their area of expertise. Unfortunately, because they are well-trained in their area of expertise, they are and they're at a premium. The public employment opportunities for HR professionals are out there, and we sometimes lose our employees. So keeping a stable workforce within our HR division is difficult because there are other opportunities in the public sector that have advantages that we are not offering. Because of those vacancies, it's very difficult, even though the HR division uses very good personnel practices to cross-train everybody, with that many vacancies, even with everybody cross-trained, meaning that there are a lot of fungible employees, there are some gaps, and some courts have to wait until an HR professional can actually deal with their problem. The other thing the HR division does is advise all the courts of appeal and the Supreme Court and their primary agencies and trial courts that that avail themselves of the resources, changes in employment law. And we know that, you know, at least every January there are a number of changes of employment laws, and I think it's important for the courts to be compliant with those laws. So HR does a good job in getting that information out. One of the challenges, again, for HR is that HR issues are unpredictable. And sometimes there's an HR crisis or problem that arises that's unanticipated, and resources have to be shifted at a very short period of time. That's true with labor negotiations. What appears to be a short labor negotiation that might take a few days could end up into weeks or months. In terms of collaborative efforts, HR works with the Office of General Counsel, obviously, on employment law issues. They also work with OGC on training and education for the courts to make sure we're in compliance. They work with finance on payroll costs and employee compensation-related issues that impact the budget. And they are currently working with the State Controller's 21st Century Payroll System to upgrade that system, and the AOC has agreed to participate as an early adopter to aid the State Controller's Office in implementing this new statewide payroll system. The HR division has decreased in size, but apparently not in workload, at least as I'm looking at the tasks that they're assuming. Many of the services they provide are provided at no cost to the user court. For example, labor negotiations. If a court chooses to use a labor negotiator from HR, there is no charge back to the court. The courts are free, obviously, to hire their own HR individuals. A number of trial courts have indicated they'd like to work with the AOC to develop a comprehensive performance management system That is something that simply hasn't been able to do. They haven't been able to do because there aren't the resources. There also is a comprehensive HR system that was rolled out to 7 courts. Other courts are interested in going on that system, but there is no funding for that system. So they could provide that service if the money was available and the courts were still interested. Oh, I should have indicated that the director of that division is Ernesto Fuentes. And what reminded me of that is the director of my next division, the finance division, Zlatko Theodorovic. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but Zlatko and I are going to be on a first-name basis for the rest of my career. So Zlatko's division is the finance division. And the finance division is a very interesting division because it seems there are certain aspects of that division that, for example, in explaining their budget, the appellate court security budget is part of the finance division. So the finance division is a jack of all trades and willing to accept whatever responsibility the council decides that they should adopt. They do typical budget management, development, and support. They're the chief advocates for the Department of Finance, along with the Chief Justice and the Administrative Director of the Courts when it comes to dealing with the Department of Finance and the legislature and explaining how the money is spent within the judicial branch. They work with the trial courts to develop financial policies and procedures, and they developed a trial court financial policies and procedures manual that's being used in the courts now. They provide audit services for the courts. As many of you know, frequently, quarterly, I guess, we look at different courts in the state. Courts are audited every 5 years, and this the finance division is the one that is doing that auditing. There'll be a new system of audits when the State Bureau of State Audits begins doing their audits. That will be an external audit, different than the internal audits we've been doing. And the department, the finance division, is going to have to work on working with the various courts as this external audit is occurring, because it'll be a little different procedure, and it will be done by people who are not as familiar with the operations of our branch as the AOC finance department. The AOC internal audits have been for internal compliance checks as opposed to external evaluations, I guess, of our process. Funding comes primarily from the general fund for this division. In 06, 07, there was a $14 million budget. In 10-11, the budget is now $21 million. That is a 30% increase from 06, 07. But as I indicated before, such things as the appellate security budget, the CHP budget, is part of that $21 million. In terms of staffing, there are 104 authorized positions with 91 positions currently filled. In 2006, there were 167 positions authorized and 127 positions filled. They had one temporary employee in 06. As of today, the number of employees is 104, 91, and no temporary employees. So in a period of 06 to today, they've gone from 167 authorized employees to 104 authorized employees, with 89 employees currently working. Their collaborative efforts include working with the Office of Court Construction and Management, obviously on fiscal issues. They work with the Information Services Division. They support a wide-ranging group of advisory groups, including the trial court budgeting groups. They have, in recent years, been called upon in a very short period of time to play out different scenarios in terms of how cuts are going to be allocated, how charges could be allocated to the different courts. And so much of their time has been spent in these little, I would call them drills, financial drills, on how certain cuts would be impacted and how allocations of certain cuts would impact trial court operations. They also obviously work with the Office of Governmental Affairs, and they work and they interface with the executive branch, specifically the Department of Finance. Challenges that face this division include basically advocating for our budget with the Department of Finance and the legislature, and justifying our expenditures. managing the complex and unique relationships among the various judicial branch entities. Educating and informing court leadership and presiding judges of their role in the state system and the state budget process, explaining changes that the Department of Finance may want information, different information or information presented in a different format, and that is the finance division is the one that has to interface with the courts to tell them about those changes. There also has been a great deal of effort made to support the various advisory committees in terms of securing information and comparables from one court to another and from one branch of the government to another branch of the government. So those are their challenges. The last division is the Office of Court Construction and Management. I think this is the division that was not properly named. I think they should be the Office of Court Management and Construction because they're doing a lot of management and not quite as much construction. They are the management firm, the facility management entity for the judicial branch, and they also are the construction and capital project managers. In terms of management, they manage over 500 facilities, and I find it somewhat mind-boggling. It's 20.8 million square feet. It's hard for me to even imagine what 21 million square feet would look like. It's my understanding that in terms of what they manage, they're managing only 3 million square feet less than the Department of General Services for the state of California. So we have a lot of square footage in the judicial branch. Their funding sources are probably the most complicated of any of the divisions, and that's because they receive money from the general fund, they receive money from the state court facilities construction fund, they receive money from the state court facilities the immediate and critical needs account, they receive money from the court facilities trust fund, and then they also receive reimbursements for the counties. There are certain ways to call them maintenance of efforts, but the county facilities payments, CFPs, that come to the Office of Court Construction and Management. In 6-7, that budget. And this was a new when we took over when we became state judicial branch control of the courthouses. This division was building. In 06-07, they had a $36 million budget. Today, it's a $209 million budget. So that is over a 500% increase since it began, but that we went from managing zero buildings to 500 buildings. The majority of the buildings were transferred in 09, and that is when the largest increase in staffing within that division occurred. In terms of temporary employees, this is where the unique employee, the IDIQ project managers come in, and those are individuals that are specific architects and other professionals that have unique talents that would not be your typical temporary employee, and generally those employees are contracted directly by Office of Court Construction and Management for whatever project or purpose that they're needed. Currently there are 10 such employees. There are 34 Apple One typical temp employees, so there's a total right now of 46 temporary employees, 10 of those being the specialized IDIQ.
Wait, you said 34 plus 10?
There are 34 current temporary filled positions. There are 8 authorized, but they're not filled. So there are 34 existing and 10, so 44.
44, thank you.
Okay.
Justice O'Leary?
Yes.
Just a question on, you say that the number of square feet that the branch is now managing is very close to what DGS is managing. Do we know how many employees DGS has? I'm looking for some kind of context around, you know, how many employees does it take for them to do their job versus how many do we have doing this job?
Yeah, I only looked at the AOC divisions. I suspect that if any taxpayer called DGS and asked them how many employees they are and how many square feet they had, you'd get that answer in 6 or 8 months. Lee knows.
Oh, Lee knows? Okay.
See?
They're very rough numbers.
Use the mic.
Okay.
Lee knows everything.
Giselle knows everything. And their similar division to ours, they have about 2,000 employees. But they also do a lot of their own trades work, so all of their operations and maintenance is done by employees. But nonetheless, we have about 165. They have about 2,000.
Wow.
Does your 165 include these 44?
No. 165 is...
210, roughly.
Yeah, is authorized positions within OCCM only. We only have about 102 actual employees working for OCCM.
And then the temps on top of that.
Right.
So, sorry to ask a follow-up here, but so, Lee, do you know of their 2,000 employees if you stripped off the trades? I mean, I'm trying to just wrap my head around
right. What
are the comparable positions in DGS to the OCCM positions and...
Apples and apples.
Apples and apples is what we're looking for. Do you have any way of knowing?
We really don't know. We've tried to get some of that information, but really don't have detailed information on this.
The structure that we have is through the maintenance contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a different structure than DGS, who hires employees to do all that. So there's, you know, those 2,000 employees are spread all around the state doing building maintenance.
It would just be, I think it would be helpful in terms of, you know, us understanding mm-hmm. the work, because this is, you know, this is an area that's been, you know, I think perplexing to some of the trial courts and perplexing all the way around. So if there was a way to get the information, I don't know if you can even get it from the state budget book as to how many folks are electricians and plumbers and, you know, framers and what have you at DGS versus the folks that are really project managing and architects and the folks that we have in our own OCCM. That would be helpful.
By the way, in their capital division, well, at least a couple of years ago, I believe they had 70 project managers. So most of them are still there right now, and now we're doing more in our capital program than they're doing, and we have a total of, including the IDIQ, we have about 20 project managers.
Wow.
Doing more work than they are now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not trying to slough off work, but just the scope. I was just going to say the scope of this, of what we were asked to do, it was to find out what each of the division was doing, what their historical funding was, what their historical staffing was, and what their challenges were. We were not asked to do a comparative. That may be something else that the council wants us to ask. Are there other ways to do it? Who does it differently? What does it cost them to do it? But, you know, I apologize for not. We only went as far as figuring out what we're doing, what it's costing us to do it, how many people it takes to do it, and what our challenges are. So
I think that's plenty for now.
Yeah.
Alan Carlson?
Can you, along those lines on the comparability, so it's not apples and apples because of the way we're structured, but at some point you could turn that into dollars? What dollar per square foot is DGS spending to do what we're spending? I mean, I know we're really low, but as was evidenced yesterday with the MassPad, but it would be interesting to see, you know, if you can't quite compare the employees, I think we can compare the dollars being spent, because I think it would look very good for us.
I think that would be important information to add.
Lee, do you have something to add to that?
Yes, we're doing exactly that, Alan. We're trying to see what they do for O&M, and those are publicly published numbers. They spend about $1.28 a square foot per month for their O&M. That includes O&M, utilities, all of their staffing, security, janitorial, and we spend considerably less, but we don't do things like janitorial, that's what reports. But we are in the process, as we speak, of trying to get that comparison to numbers. I do think we will be less than them.
Thank you, Lee. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Justice O'Leary. Oh, wait.
I just wanted to, you know, following up on this idea, I think it would be a valuable exercise to actually do that apples-to-apples comparison at some point. I think unlike other divisions of the AOC where we kind of understand what a finance division does, and, you know, we have some experience that goes back a long ways. OCCM is one of those areas where we don't have a lot of experience, and it would be nice to be able to measure, you know, what's happening in OCCM against a comparable agency. So I realize that it's the numbers are kind of elusive and the staffing is kind of elusive in DGS, but presumably all that information is available if you are vigilant. So I just think that would really kind of enrich our discussion, especially as we come upon a new budget year, you know, and we have to look at all these issues all over again.
I think that Justice Miller at E&P had said earlier that if you have a problem or a question, you can refer it to E&P. And so he knows that we're looking into this, and he knows further that A&E is doing some other work, and I know you will be having some discussion about that. So this is just one of those to add to the list of something that we could add to the refer to A&E for the future.
Are you listening, Justice Huffman?
What? In
terms of collaborative efforts, obviously OCCM works with all the courts they're managing facilities for. They work with the AOC. They work with everyone really in the branch. One of the things that I think is interesting, one of the operations they run is a call center. They have a 24/7 call center that enables any court to contact the AOC Facilities Division for any facilities need 24/7. They get 8,000 to 10,000 calls per month, and they have 6 staff members that manage it. And I guess a lot of it is done via email. The other thing that they do is they have developed standards based on the Building Operations and Managers Association's standards on when things should be replaced and when things should be maintained, and they try and apply those industry principles to the entire branch and all of our holdings. So, next, I guess, Justice Huffman. I know I'm a tough act to follow.
Can I use the scooter?
No.
All right.
You can rent it.
Yeah, I can't afford it. Well, thank you. First of all, with regard to the issue that was raised, the Executive Committee has authorized A&E to begin the process of divisional reviews more in-depth and comparatively. We have targeted the Trial Court Administrative Services Division as our starting point, simply because it can be directly related to the trial courts. We can get independent evaluations from court executives, and that's a starting point. We will look to the Executive Committee to see if they have an order of divisions they want us to look at, and we will undertake that as resources are available. I'm here to report on several divisions. First of all, the Executive Office, headed by our Interim Administrative Director, Ron Overholt. There has been a reorganization over the recent time with that. The Executive Office Programs Division was removed from the Executive Office, and the Executive Office, for our purposes here, really consists of 3 functional areas. One, the Executive Office itself, which is headed by the Administrative Director and performs the constitutional functions of that office, working with the Judicial Council, the Chief Justice, assisting in the establishment of branch priorities, also responsible for the development of the AOC programs and the supervision of the entire AOC branch. Its collaborative efforts, of course, go through not only the judiciary, but the legislature, the executive branch, and multiple private entities in addition to that. The executive office itself is small, with 6 authorized and filled positions. The 2010-11 budget is $1.82 million, of which $1.76 are general fund money, and the administration of justice fund of $65,000. The unique issues with regard to that division are is what it is. It is the management of the AOC, and is unique in that context. It has also 2 functioning units within it, The first one to discuss is the Office of Emergency Response and Security, which is headed by the senior manager, Malcolm Franklin. That division or unit was created in 2005 as a small unit within the Executive Office Division. It's responsible for the council's work on ensuring safety and security in the courts and developing emergency and continuity operation plans for times of crisis. It provides specialist advice, expertise, and programs and services to the superior and appellate courts and to the judicial council upon request in areas of physical security, personal security, and emergency planning. As pointed out, their budget does not include the CHP court security program for the appellate courts and the Supreme Court. That is housed elsewhere. As far as personnel at the current time, it has 9 positions. Three of the positions are general fund. One is vacant. It has 12 funded positions, 11 of which are authorized and 9 are filled. They have one Apple One temporary position. The unique issues with regard to that division is it deals mostly with requests for advice and assistance from the trial courts. It administers programs to provide equipment and enhancements exclusively to the trial courts. And most requests also involve some travel itself. It works extensively with OCCM, the architects and construction companies, on the security planning, infrastructure, and design, and working plans for capital building projects underway. It works with the courts, the sheriffs, and the probation departments. With regard to that unit in 2005, when it was created, the general fund budget was $104,000, trial court improvement fund of $3 million, and facilities $250,000, or total budget of $3.7 million. In 2010-11, with the 9 FTEs down from the 10 that were in 2009-10, it has a personnel budget of $1.34 million. In a lot of these, in each one of these, they have an operation and overhead and expense budgets, which include rent. The one thing in this process, rent for the AOC facilities has consistently gone up each year, which rent is paid to the General Services Agency. Currently, it's funded now with general fund money, trial court improvement fund, facilities trust fund, for a total of $3.7 million. It also contains money in that budget for what's called local assistance, $1.9 million, which is used to provide camera systems, duress alarm systems, access card systems, and some screening equipment for the trial courts. The other unit within the executive office is the Office of Communications, headed by senior manager Peter Allen. Effective September of 2011, that office was transferred from the Executive Office Programs Division and combined with the Public Information Office to become this particular single entity. The budget for that office, if we can go back and trace it in its earlier iterations in 2006-07, was $2.06 million in operating personnel expenses, which compares in 2009-10, it had reached $2.29 million, and by 2010-11, it is $1.776 million. Staffing has, again, if we can basically, as we track it, it had 20 filled positions in 2005-06. As of 2000, as of the current time, it has 13 filled positions, 3 temporary positions. The staffing for that division has stayed fairly steady throughout that particular period of time. Of course, the Office of Communications works with the Chief Justice, the Judicial Council, the Administrative Director. It involves communications throughout the branch, media relations, web collections, video productions and collaboration, fairly active, involved division. It collaborates, as I've indicated, with a broad range of entities within the branch. Turning then to the, you'll notice, incidentally, something I think that's illustrative of our judicial branch. Our two trial judges have extensive, detailed, very careful, organized PowerPoints. The rest of the appellate justices, on the other hand, are still thinking about it.
It's our age.
Watch it. I can't take you any place, can I? No. All right, turning then to the Center for Families, Children, and the Court. That center was created in 2000 with the merger of a statewide office of Family Court Services and the Center for Children in the Courts at that particular time. It is a fairly complex division that includes a range of activities, including education, training, management analysis, reporting, program evaluation, self-help services. They engage in staffing the Family and Juvenile Advisory Committee, such groups as the Elkin Task Force, the Domestic Violence Task Force, the Self-Represented Litigants Task Force, the Blue Ribbon Commission, and a myriad of other activities. Their budget in 2005-06 was in the amount of approximately $65.47 million. However, a good share of that, $49 million from the trust fund, was, again, money for trial court activities. By 2010-11, their budget is $95.7 million, which includes $78.7 million of, quote, local assistance. That is principally in the area of dependency counsel that either is paid directly by the AOC through the draft representation program or by reimbursement to the trial courts for their actual expenses in dependency counsel representation. Their current staffing level in 2005-06 was 65.5 FTEs. As of the present time, it's 77.3 FTEs actually working in the CFCC and 3.3 working in other divisions and 4909 employees. The unique issue with regard to this division in particular is its funding sources. Of the FTEs, only 18 are directly funded by the general fund, and one is funded by the additional one is funded by the general fund through reimbursement having to do with the collection process for the court recovery cost recovery at the year end. The remaining are funded by such entities as the Archstone Foundation, the Federal Office of Violence Against Women, the California Endowment, the Family Law Trust Fund, Federal Trust Fund, and a variety of other activities. In addition, it administers a substantial amount of money paid directly to the trial courts for various activities. This last year funded $165 million, administered $165 million in funding that was connected to trial court activities. Again, such things as child support commissioners, family law facilitators, self-help centers, court-appointed counsel and dependency, and a variety of other activities. Collaboration, I suspect you would say, is the first name of that particular division, since it works extensively not only with all of the AOC divisions, the trial courts, the various task forces that I've identified, and almost all aspects of the child welfare process. It is headed by Diane Nunn. I'll turn then next to the Court Programs Administrative Services Division, which is the recipient of a substantial portion of the Executive Office Programs Division. And again, this is make some of these comparative numbers from 2005 to 2011 a little dicey because they took over a substantial portion of the Executive Office Programs. This division, as it is now, then was formed in September 2011 with the merger of the Appellate and Trial Court Judicial Services Division with much of the Executive Office Programs Division, which was a merger designed to promote efficiencies within the AOC and create a division with a specific and focused mission of serving the direct administrative, operational, programmatic needs of the trial and appellate courts. Again, tracking funding for this becomes a bit of a challenge because it was a small organization, as it was the Appellate and Trial Court Judicial Services Division, with 14.1 FTEs and a $2 million budget. It also, at that time, administered over $22 million in the as legal assistance, which means mostly the Chief Justice's assigned judge program, as administered by that division, and the funding is placed in that division for the payment of the assigned judges. By 2011, the division, it is now a larger division of 71 regular and 13 agency temps, with a budget of $10.3 million and $26 million in funding for the Chief Justice's assigned judge program. The staffing at this point has changed to, as best we can determine, 58.6 FTEs, of which you have 55.4 regular employees, 3.6909 employees, and then in addition to that, there's three agency temps. This division has, of course, the collaborative issues of working with the trial and appellate courts, and particularly with the area and with the Chief Justice with regard to the assigned judges program, and provides services essentially directly to and for the benefit of the trial and appellate courts. Lastly, for me, is the Trial Court Administrative Services Division. And again, tracking part of the numbers in your material becomes a little difficult because the Phoenix system, which this entity has, was originally placed in the North Central Regional Office Fund. And if you follow the regional offices, you'll see money in that budget that is now not there because that money was transferred to this division. And the purpose of the division is to provide, pursuant to the Judicial Council's direction, comprehensive administrative infrastructure services for the trial courts. It manages the Phoenix program, which provides transition assistance for trial courts moving away from county stewardship to judicial branch, financial, and human resources system. It provides day-to-day direct services to the trial courts, including accounting, financial services, trust accounting services, centralized treasury, core business analysis, training and support. It designs, tests, and deploys and maintains the Phoenix system, which enables the courts to produce standardized sets of monthly, quarterly, and annual financial statements. Is involved heavily day-to-day with the trial courts. As of the present time, the budget for the 2010-11 $16.205 million, of which $5.5 million are general fund, $8 million is trial court trust fund, $1.9 million is trial court improvement fund, and $530,000 of modernization fund. As of October of this year, the division has 95 authorized FTEs, and one non-contract temporary employee. There are currently 11 vacancies. The division has 84 employees, including a 909 employee. The unique issues of the division, of course, is that it provides these daily shared services center for the Phoenix program. It is comprised of, division also engages, as I say, in the daily activities of working with the trial courts. It provides fiscal advice and assistance, accounting advice, the Phoenix system stabilization, bank account consolidation, and a myriad of other activities done by this particular division. So,
Mr. Buckley,
yes.
Who's in charge of this division, the trial court?
Oh, you want to know that too? Kurt Sutherland is the manager of that division. I'm sorry. All right, let's turn then to Judge Buckley for a much more organized presentation.
Good afternoon, everyone. As I look out, I'm reliving my 32nd DUI trial, with an officer testifying yet again about FSTs and then an expert on blood alcohol content. We're sort of glazing over. I am very lucky to do a lot of teaching, judicial teaching, with the talented people at CJR, and I show a fair amount of movies when I teach. And my kids, who are now high school, college, or college now, are amazed. And they go, Dad, you show movies? And I said, yes, they'll break it up and so forth. I think you all would love a My Cousin Vinny excerpt right about now, right? Okay. Yes, don't be so enthusiastic about that. Okay, I'm talking about the regional office, Information Services Division, and something called CCMS. Not only did they give the new kid on the block the last spot, but they gave me CCMS. So let's talk about the regional office. I want to echo Justice Huffman's comments that the directors were just fabulous in providing support, starting with Jody Mattel, calls while they're driving, emails at night, and calls at 7:30 in the morning. So I really appreciate all that. The general purpose of each regional office is to provide support services to the courts within that region, improve access and responsiveness. Here is a visual presentation, I'm sure you've seen it, that breaks down where each of the three offices cover. And they're referred to either as Northern Central or Sacramento. I'll probably more call about, talk about where they are located. Within each regional office, we have the administrative director, the core staff, special program units, which I'll talk about very briefly, other AOC division staff, and then also staff and contractors working on statewide initiatives. Should comment that with the change of the regional office this year, there is now only one regional administrative director rather than one for each of the three offices. And with that, we get a reduction of two people in the cost savings there. In looking at the special program units for safety of time, pretty much if you look at the names, it describes it. The Community Corrections Program in San Francisco is mostly federally funded. The Reengineering Unit in Sacramento is looking at ways of best practices. The Enhanced Collections Unit in Burbank spends a fair amount of time trying to enhance, hence the name, the collections through the criminal system. As to the staffing, I understand that you all received a PDF file that if you look at the top left corner, it's 343 pages. So for the final exam, this is on page 131. But in all seriousness, I think it gives a good breakdown if you can't read it quite well there. I need to emphasize that what this staff really does is bring in a generalist approach to the, whereas in many of the other divisions, they have a specialty and they stay with it. These people have a wide range of experience in training and court services, finance, legal, facilities, HR, emergency response, security, and courts. And when you go into the body of the material provided to you, it is very enlightening as to what great services they provide to many of the courts throughout their regions. Just to give you a few examples, some of which you probably well know since you might have been involved in authorizing it. In Humboldt in 2008, the CEO requested some help on the integration of their new criminal justice management system. because it was not able to integrate with the justice partners. So the original director then went out and really served as a consultant. And so instead of the court having to pay a fair amount of consulting fees, the regional office provided that at no cost to the court. In Sacramento, Placer County, through its presiding judge, asked for assistance with a CEO issue, and the regional director became the temporary interim CEO for 3 months, and for a while they were on fiscal oversight, and through the help of the regional office was able to get out of the fiscal oversight. Sierra County has used it, the regional office, for courthouse proposals. Nevada and King counties, as you well know, have utilized the regional offices for assistance on computer systems. Through the Burbank office, the Riverside Project was in, helped quite a bit by that regional office down in the southern region. Santa Barbara is just one of many examples. Used the regional office for video conference technology that allows competency hearings to be conducted through the state hospital. We could go on a long, long time, but we don't want to glaze you anymore. But it really is providing excellent service to many of the courts within each of the regions. The other users, if this helps at all, in all three of the regions, we have the Office of General Counsel, the Finance, HR, Security, Office of Emergency Response, the Office of Court Construction and Management, in each of the three offices. And I'll give you a little more mental picture of what that means. In Sacramento, in addition, there's the Trial Court Administrative Services Division housed in that office. And then in Burbank, CCMS, or what we'll talk about in a moment, the PMO is there. So, again, quite a bit of use of those offices. This was my request of Ms. Jody to maybe get a better picture. And if you can, if I walk you through it, when you look at the location of San Francisco, there's actually 618 people that work within that region office, physically work in that space. Four of them are staff members. Two are on the special projects. So when you go to the second to last column, the number of staff in the San Francisco office that actually work for the regional office, including the special project, are six people, just under 1%, therefore are actually working for the regional office in San Francisco. Out of 187 people in Sacramento, seven are regional staff. And then in Burbank, out of 61, 10, or about 16.3%. And again, a quick mental picture here for you. In Sacramento, as far as the space, including the conference center and the special units, about 11.6% of the total space is used by people working for the regional office. Only 1% in San Francisco. Keep in mind that San Francisco does not have a conference center space. And then for Burbank, 26.5% of the, if you will, the square footage is used by people that are actually working there. As Justice Huffman explained with the Phoenix Project, there are historical funding issues for the regional offices that make it really difficult, if not impossible, to compare 5 years ago to now. So through 2007, 2008, the Phoenix Project, as you heard, was located and funded through that office. And then up to this year, 2010-11, CCMS was funded and run through the southern region. So, again, I don't know if this helps. Let me give you a little chart that sort of walks you through it. As to the San Francisco or northern coastal, if you look at, and again, for the final exam, page 132 of the PDF file, the number there for the San Francisco office is 1.348 million for the fiscal year 2010-2011. If we take out the program that's housed there, the community corrections, then the budget that we have for that office is $850,000. In Sacramento, we have really two things to look at. Starting with the $1.7 million budget, $90,000 is budgeted for the re-engineering, but that's specifically for that region. There's also approximately $200,000, the best estimate that Jody Patel could give me, as to AOC utilizing those people and that facility for AOC reengineering. So that's about roughly $290,000. And then the Nevada County, which I quickly mentioned a moment ago, was in their budget for $675,000. So approximately the budget specifically for Sacramento is $800,000. The Southern Division breakout for the program is $1.1 million. Okay? We're going to move on to information services. Again, we have some overlap, so it makes it difficult to point to something specific as to certain items. But nonetheless, it provides application services, infrastructure, technology expertise, full life services of the cycle of technology, and the operational core services. If you look at starting at page 238, where it talks about the organizational structure, they give some great examples. Just to give you, again, a mental picture, we give reference to the case management systems. One example is ACCMS, the Appellate Court Case Management System, which therefore runs for the Supreme Court, all the appellate districts in 10 locations. As to the enterprise resource planning, that includes work being done by ISD for the Phoenix Project. Also connected to what Justice O'Leary talked about with respect to the management of the construction facilities, this is a software that covers the 533 buildings. It's a web-based software application used by everyone that when you make those calls, that what 8,000 to 10,000 calls a month. CCMS deployment, the third bullet point, self-explanatory. Under technical infrastructure and user support, hardware, operating systems, and software, again, for the Supreme Court, the district courts, AOC, and the Judicial Council. Also, the LAN-WAN program, which is the network infrastructure. 53 out of the 58 courts use that, as far as also 55 out of 58 courts use it for their security. And then I'm sure you're familiar with the centralized data center. I'm sure you've heard quite a bit about that. As to staffing, it calls for 133 authorized positions. Again, as Judge Nadler talked about, I cannot answer where the .12 missing person is, but 109.88 are filled. Through the Apple One contract, there are 8 agency temps. There are also 87 contractors. I'll show that to you in a moment. And then, really, as of September 30th, there were 14 agency temps, but it's now down to 8. What here is a list. I'm not going to read them all for you. I'm not going to describe much of any, but it gives you a quick mental picture also of the contractors of the 87. You can see quite a few on this slide are with CCMS, including deployment, V2, V3, et cetera. Here on the next slide, such things such as the protective order registry, going to the bottom one, the enterprise methodology and process, you get numbers as to where these contractors are. And this slide ends with the most being 7 for sustain, which is with individual courts. Here is a quick look at the finance. Again, with keeping in mind that CCMS works through this budget as well as some others, you cannot get a good historical picture. But I did include on the right column a quick reference where pretty much every line item has gone down since 09-10 with respect to the 10-11 fiscal year. Now, moving on to CCMS. As to the purpose, I don't think I need to talk much about the purpose of CCMS. I'm sure you know it better than I do. Focus on the program management office, what's responsible for the day-to-day management of CCMS, application development, et cetera, as to the maintenance, support, and hosting of CCMS, but also serve as staff to the executive committee and the 3 advisory committees relating to CCMS. Here's a breakdown of the personnel of the PMO, Project Management Office, 30 authorized spots. As we speak, 10 are vacant, but 10 temporary staff are being used. I'll show a quick reference to that in a moment. And 18 contractors are being used in addition. This slide, again, page 166, for the people that are looking at it. If you look at the red lines, those are the vacant spots. So you can see that they are in the development unit, the project management unit, and the trial court services unit as to the 10 vacant spots. Of the temporary staff, at page 9 of the PDF file is the human resources matrix summary, just for your information. That provides 30 positions for PMO, and it breaks down what those are to be, 3 administrative staff, et cetera. Of those 30 positions, 10 are currently being filled, and they are 3 administrative staff, 7 product acceptance testers, and I can give you specific numbers and description if you wish later on. As to the contractors listed here on this slide, so there are 2 in a manager position, 7 in testing resources, and this pretty much coincides with the Deloitte. Moving on, to support transition support from the vendor to the AOC, and it's anticipated that this contracting approach will save $5.3 million through 2013-2014. If you look at the budget for CCMS, keep in mind that it comes from various spots. The bottom line number for 2010-11 is $62.2 million. Keep in mind, I can say this because my college roommate was an accountant. My wife is a CPA. You know what the definition of an outgoing accountant is? The outgoing accountant looks at your feet, not his or her feet. So looking at this number, I know it's just there, but I think this helps you look at that number in 3 different ways. As far as the funding by division, about $11 million is through the Southern Office, Burbank. $29.4 million is through the PMO office. And then Information Services has 21.6 in its budget. That adds up to the 62.2. Another way of looking at that same number as to the program by fund, and you can see here the general fund is 0.5. A majority is in the trial court trust fund, adding up again to the 62.2. And then by program area, though this is in the breakdown provided in your material, it provides how the project costs versus the interim case management systems, because there is a distinction with the people involved in this of putting V2 and V3 in a certain approach of the accounting, and again, you know this probably better than I do, versus the ongoing development and deployment. If you look at the second line, the CCMS development of V4 of $20.7 million, if you want a breakdown of that, it's provided on this slide. I'm on hosting, professional services, trial courts, staff, and governance. Going back to that other slide, as to the deployment over the past year of CCMS of $13.5 million, the breakdown is here of professional services, trial courts, and staff. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you, Judge Buckley. Any questions or comments?
I have a question.
Yes. Justice Hull?
Judge Buckley, I'm sorry. No, my question is actually more directed to Justice Huffman. I was just wondering, Dick, is it part of the committee's charge in this effort to look at the AOC from a strict organizational standpoint? In other words, what I learned many years ago, and most of which I have forgotten, organizational theory. I mean, one organization, A, has a certain purpose. Organization B has another purpose. A is organized this way, and it's very efficient. B is organized this way, differently, and it's very efficient. But if they had cross, if that was crossed, they would be very inefficient. And I'm wondering whether or not that's anything that, that your committee has looked into or intends. I know this is an interim report, or will look into, as I say, just under the heading of organizational theory. In other words, can it be done better?
Yes, all right. I think without tying it to organizational theory as such, our charge, of course, this charge was simply to gather information and present it, and we've attempted to do that without drawing any inferences to whether something's good or bad, but rather here's what it is. We interpret our charge as we begin. We have 2 projects that may illustrate it. E&P has asked us to look at all of the non-construction contracts, consulting agreements, the methodology for their issuance and approval, and we have a group that's working through that, and we'll come back to Council through E&P and make recommendations, if any, or change, from the standpoint, again, of the accountability and financial efficiency of that process. The next step in our charge, as we believe it is, to then look at ultimately all of the divisions of the AOC from the standpoint, again, of financial efficiency and accountability. Is the one, are we accountable for what we're doing? But two, is this a financially efficient way of doing business? We've tried to stay out of what we think is the area of the Strategic Evaluation Committee that's going to be making a report, which we think, we understand, will be more focused organizationally, governance-wise, and perhaps from a policy perspective. But our view is our charge, whatever your structure is to look at it and say, do we think from a fiscal efficiency perspective, this either works, doesn't work, or we may make some comparisons. For example, if and when we are asked to look at the OCCM side of building maintenance, for example, or those costs, we may have to then find out what General Services does, what Federal GSA does, what others do, to try to see if we can draw any inferences which we would then bring to you. That's a long answer to your question.
But I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Yes, Judge Herman.
And Judge Miller asked me to clarify. Just so everybody's clear, the CCMS budget is the 2010-2011, so the $62 million is not the $14 million that was authorized by the Council for this fiscal year. And you saw in there 21 tester positions as well as one additional tester position. Those positions are obviously gone from CCMS at this point since we've reached the product development phase is over. And those were temporary employees that existed throughout the four-year development of V4 down in the Orange County office on a daily basis testing various aspects of the CCMS product. So.
Thank you.
But I think, and Judge Buckley would know how this is organized better, but the full CCMS budget includes V3, V2, maintenance and operation, and other aspects, not just the $14 million deployment aspect.
Correct.
To it.
Correct.
So,
which goes to that last slide that broke that out. Yes.
Thank you. Any other? Justice Miller.
And you know how hard this is for me to say, Justice Upton, but thank you. And I'm not going to write it, but thank you. You should be commended, and your committee should be commended. It's worked exactly as it was intended, and you provided an excellent overview of the AOC and the different divisions and the work that they do, and we sincerely appreciate it. It was an excellent presentation.
Thank you very much.
Here, here. And I want to just add, with all joking aside, we realize it was a huge assignment, and maybe more collateral assignments will result from it. But it's important to know how valuable it is for all of us to have this information, for it to be public record as part of our business meeting, because as dry as it may seem, it is essential for us in order to make informed decisions later on. So we thank you for your efforts and your work product. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief Justice. And obviously the laboring oar has been very heavily with Judges Nadler and Buckley and Justice O'Leary. But in addition to all the directors of their divisions helping us out, I really neglected to say, particularly HR and finance had to help us through the overarching view of all of this, not just their divisions, but everyone else. And so we've had all the cooperation we would ask for, and if we have to, we'll go back and ask for more as you ask us to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe this concludes our ambitious two-day business meeting agenda, or day and a half. So, before we close, I do want to mention that I received from Zlatko earlier before or at our lunch break a letter from Anna Matasantos from December 13th today that hereby reduces, as of January 1st, 2012, it reduces or adjusts the following expenditures. These are the intended trigger cuts, and it's a four-page letter with attachments that's available for all of you. I think it's being distributed now after copies were made. We are not on the list now. And but it's important information as we make decisions moving forward. And once this is passed out to all members, I'd like to conclude the meeting as we do in brief remembrance of judicial colleagues who have recently passed on. I also want to make a point of saying that some of us learned that our colleague and fellow judicial council member, Judge Baker, lost his mother yesterday and explains, of course, his absence. But I want to say that I know that our thoughts are with Judge Baker and his family during this time. So of our recently deceased judicial colleagues, they are Judge Robert Conyers, Superior Court of California, County of San Diego, Judge Hillary Cook, Superior Court of California, County of Alpine, Judge Barnett Cooperman, Superior Court of California, County of Los Angeles, Judge Keith Groneman, Superior Court of California, County of Los Angeles, Judge Orville Sullivan, Municipal Court of California, County of Imperial. All were retired from the bench, and we honor them for their service to the cause of justice in California. It is also, however, with a tremendous sense of loss that we mark the passing last week of Lauren Miller, an assigned judge in Los Angeles. And recently, with some of you, I had the honor of presenting an award for legal services named in honor of his father at the state bar meeting last fall. And I understand that Judge Miller was presiding over traffic court at Huntington Park Courthouse as recently as a month ago. And so we close with him, but I'd ask if any of the Los Angeles judges or attorneys would like to say a few words about Judge Miller before we conclude. Judge Wesley.
Well, I had the privilege of appearing before Judge Miller on, I can't even count the number of occasions, because he... You wanted to go into his court whenever you could get into his court, because he was a wonderful man and very understanding of the plight of a young public defender. And what an asset to our court. He worked just about every assignment on the court, and every assignment he worked with great pleasure. You never heard him complain about an assignment ever. He's just a wonderful man. He has a son that's a lawyer that appears in our courts, and I hope that his son follows in his father's footsteps, because he is such an asset to the legal community in Los Angeles.
Thank you. Judge Asman Gerst.
Yes, I was personal friends with Lauren Miller from the early 1970s. I followed him at the Attorney General's office, and he was just a big, huge, wonderful bear of a man and a great loss to the court.
Thank you for those kind words. We stand adjourned, and as you know, Nancy Spiro will have announcements for travel arrangements. Oh, Judge Rosenberg.
Chief, the circle of life is interesting. I just want to mention my seatmate here next to me just became a grandfather about 45 minutes ago. So, Mark Robinson.
Congratulations, Mark.
I still don't know her name, though. I know it's a girl.
That's a good start. Thank you. Thank you. We stand adjourned.
Congratulations.
Happy holidays.